Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Jumping, draftable Jimmy Herbs.
Oh, how's it going, Zach?
I don't know. I don't know that we can ever say that again.
I mean, I was just casually browsing UrbanDictionary.com earlier today, looking at that G section, and yeah, I don't know what happened.
I will say this. I think Phil Jackson is messing with everybody.
I will say that I'm very glad we have Phil Jackson in the NBA.
He is a treasure.
Every time he opens his mouth, every time he gets near a keyboard.
I really don't know what to think is just mistake with him and what is just him going, I'm bored today, let's see what I can do. if you haven't read it, go to the New York Times. They've got a Q&A with Phil Jackson that is just, my lord.
Read the entire thing.
Read the entire thing for sure.
Because it starts off and it's like, you know, they're talking about the Knicks and the draft and, like, there's some interesting things here and there. And then out of nowhere, like, the question comes up, which you knew was going to happen about the three-point shooting and the tweet that Jackson sent out. And then it takes a turn.
It takes a sudden turn. Steve Mills is also in this. I would have liked pictures of Steve Mills as Phil was talking about certain subjects.
How do you think Knicks fans feel about the fact that Phil Jackson said the reason Steve Mills represented the team with the draft was that he will be there a long time, longer than Phil will? Like, he's the future of the front office. Steve Mills.
I mean, I gotta feel like, as always, Knicks fans, optimistic.
Yeah.
That's probably what they feel.
There's no reason not to be.
It's truly bad when, you know, I'm a Timberwolves fan. I feel bad for the Knicks as a Timberwolves fan. Like, that's where we are.
This was
before the Wolves got Andrew Wiggins and it looked like Kevin Love was on the way out. Still felt bad for the Knicks fans.
God, the whole, like, well, if he doesn't want to play in the triangle, we don't want him. It reminds me of the Lakers saying, like, if they don't want to play with Kobe, like, they can go somewhere else. It's just like, well, like, you need talent on this team. And, like, you just lost, like, 60-whatever games playing this horrible triangle. And, like, yeah, it's not just because of the triangle that you lost all those games. But, like, I'm not sure that players really enjoy playing in that system. And I think that might be an actual real-world problem.
I don't think the triangle is bad. And I don't think it's outdated. I don't think it's something that's impossible to run. You do need good players to run.
I don't think it's impossible. But I think it's not ideal anymore. And I think,
I don't know. I mean, I think you can add wrinkles to it that make it ideal. Everyone has stolen ideas with the ball movement and the player movement from, you know, the Princeton offense, from the triangle. Like, it's everything's a collage of NBA historical offenses, right?
Yes.
And the triangle fits into that. And so I think that you can make it work. It's just you can't make it work with, you know, Andrea Bargnani and Lou Amundsen.
Yeah. And that's the problem, is I wish they would just, like, play a simpler style until they get, like, the players where they can actually, like, use it.
Yeah, I think
generally you need to match, like, you have to see who you have as a player, and then you need to, like, have a system that works through that, not the other way around. At least you don't have that luxury when you don't have talent, you know?
Right, and part of it is, you know, it's, you want to set up a culture, and you want to set up an offensive identity, but if 90% of that roster isn't going to be there, and the other 10% is out for the season.
Yeah, then what's the point?
You know, yeah, then what are you actually accomplishing?
Yeah. And so that was one thing, like, we make fun of, like, a lot of the things Charles Barkley says on this show, but, like, he kept saying throughout the season, like, you can't run the triangle with guys who were, like, they know they're not going to be on the team next year. Like, it's mostly free agents. A lot of these guys are fringe NBA players, and, like, they're not going to buy in and learn that system. They want to, like, a lot of them just want to get their numbers.
But also, I mean, what
also, they don't have the skills necessarily to pull it off.
Right, but also, like, why are we assuming the Knicks wanted to win last year.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't.
Yeah.
Well, they did, coming into the season, I think.
And did then they? They said the right things. For years, the Kings said, you know, oh yeah, we're going to be as competitive as ever. We want to be competitive this year. We have our eyes on the playoffs, and they had a 25 win team. You know, yeah. I think you say certain things to sell tickets, and then I think that there's a reality. I mean, Sam Hinkie's the only one that's really obvious about it, right?
Sam Hinkie is the most transparent about it, but I think other teams have been more honest. Like, if the Knicks seriously went into the year trying to tank, then that's the right move, I guess. Like, it ended up working out fine. I mean, I got the number 4 pick, which is pretty good in this draft, which we'll get to. But yeah, maybe that was the plan all along. Maybe they were just fooling everybody, and it wasn't actually a failure when Phil Jackson came out and spoke to the media and said that, like, this wasn't how I thought it was going to go. We have collectively failed, and I have to take the responsibility and all that stuff that he said throughout the year. Maybe that was all just like BS and the plan was to lose. I don't know. But yeah, I mean,
I just think we talk about how like Phil plays all these mind games, but then we cherry pick what we think is him being honest. Like I assume he's always got an ulterior motive to what he says.
So what was his ulterior motive for this Goink thing?
I think sometimes you just wake up and you say, I want to confuse the hell out of everybody today. And I think that's what he did.
He has done that. And that's when you get the New York Times. You just, you make an interview happen.
Yeah.
And then you just, you wait for the moment and then you just seize it. You just doink the moment.
It's very possible he doesn't know what he's saying and he doesn't know what's going on. I like to think of him as an evil genius.
I like to think of him that way.
You know how Ricky Bobby only liked to pray to the baby Jesus? I only like to pray to the evil genius Phil Jackson.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
Every night before you go to bed.
Yeah, just, dear evil genius mustache twirling Phil Jackson, please set the internet on fire tomorrow. And I think that I honestly think he has a plan for building towards an NBA championship, which was just recently won by the Golden State Warriors.
Oh, what a
segue. How about that for a segue? Yeah. That was as smooth as a Steph Curry jumper.
Yes.
Which went in a lot, which is why the Golden State Warriors are champs. We haven't podcasted since the championship.
We needed to give people some time to digest this.
Yeah, also, yeah. I was really tired from traveling, didn't want to do
for that.
That's also a thing.
Long live the 2014-2015 season. It was a great one.
Yeah, season was over. It was good. It wasn't.
You don't think it was a great season?
No, I don't. I think it was a good season. We didn't get Kevin Durant all that much.
Yeah, injuries were a problem.
Yeah, injuries were a problem. I think it could have been so much better. We didn't get the playoff matchups that we were hoping for in the West. I think we had a very basic playoffs, it felt like. The finals were closer than they should have been, but I don't know that they were good finals, if that makes sense.
I thought it was really competitive. Like, I enjoyed... It was a really weird finals, and I don't... Like, I think, ideally, if somebody had described to me what was going to happen and said, like, this is the style the Cavs played, and it was over in 6 games, and blah, 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 I would just kind of be like, oh. But, like, actually going through it and watching those games, like, it was really good. Like, I very much enjoyed that series. I wouldn't ask for a lot more from that series. I think overall the playoffs were, yeah, I mean, I loved that Spurs-Clippers series. I think that was one of the best series in
years. That's the thing, it was the first round.
But it was just in the first round.
It was bad timing on everything, I think.
Yeah, and we didn't get the Spurs-Warriors series. We didn't even get Clippers-Warriors because they got tired out and they like messed up that fourth quarter against Houston. So the Western Conference Finals weren't that great. The Hawks were the biggest disappointment ever. the playoffs were kind of hit or miss. I liked them overall. Like I thought the finals were great. And I thought the Warriors just, I've loved watching them all season. But I thought generally, like, aside from the injuries, I thought we had a really good regular season. We have a lot of teams that are, you know, there weren't that many teams that I actively tried to avoid this year. Like, maybe the Pacers.
Sure.
that's just me.
It was fine. Like, the Warriors were fun. The MVP race was fun, as long as you didn't get into discussion about it. Anthony Davis was fun, and he was, you know, pretty healthy this year.
Anthony Davis. We had a lot of calling him out.
Once the trades happened for the Cavs, they were a lot of fun. I don't know, like the rookie class wasn't that fun because of the injuries. You know, like, I mean, Andrew Wiggins was great. Nerlens Noel was a lot of fun, but outside of that, like, we didn't have a ton. Like, with Parker injured and Julius Randle injured and all that stuff, like,
and
you know,
Embiid not playing all year.
Yeah, Embiid not playing. Like, that was disappointing. Like, I think it was a good season. It was a fine playoffs, but and considering the circumstances, the finals were probably as good as they could have been.
Yeah, I think so.
But that doesn't mean it couldn't have been better.
Yeah, I mean, I was like sort of most of the year I was kind of hoping we get Hawks Warriors, but like then the Hawks. Like weren't the Hawks anymore in the playoffs, so that would have probably been a sweep, right? Like, best possible finals under the circumstances, and like, you know, there's some people saying like, well, if Cleveland had Kyrie and Kevin Love, like maybe they would have won the title. I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I was like,
I like
it
to
just
think
changes
of,
so much. Like,
right, the style of play would have been so much different.
Exactly,
I'm not saying the Cavs couldn't have won that series with a healthy roster, but maybe. They're not playing the same defense.
Exactly, like not at all.
Yeah, they're not playing the same defense. They're not playing the same pace. And I think you try to get into a shootout with the Warriors. I don't know about that.
You don't. You just don't do that. Like that's like you do know about that. You know that's not what you do because you will lose. So yeah, I thought the series ended, you know, kind of how we expected. Like it was. Yeah, this series played out pretty much exactly like the Grizzlies one did, and I was pretty happy for Iguodala. I understood that some people voted for LeBron. I don't even really quite know what I would do if I had a vote, which I didn't. But, you know, when Kerr took to the podium and said, like, oh, this is so fitting that it went to Iguodala when he set the tone for our season by saying he'd come off the bench when I asked him to, and this is a total team thing, I was kind of like, yeah, like, that's kind of awesome. This is a guy that I think we've both enjoyed watching for 11 years, and to see him kind of take this role that suits him, even if he could obviously be starting on most teams in the league, and then come in and actually step back into that role in the finals and be the difference maker. Like that was a pretty cool story.
Yeah, it was a cool story. I actually think I would have voted for Curry.
Yeah.
I thought
we didn't get any votes.
Yeah, like I get voting for LeBron, I get voting for Iguodala. I also thought who had aside from LeBron, who had a complete series in the finals? Like Iguodala didn't have a complete series. He was really good.
He had a complete series.
For the most part, like he was really good, but it was something where I thought the last three games, the first game I thought Curry was pretty good. The last three games, I thought he managed the game perfectly.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't score great all the time, and he didn't, you know, he wasn't a monster offensively, but I thought the way he managed the game, paced the game within the half-court offense, and created space for, you know, those 4-on-3 moments in the half-court.
Yeah, those advantages were all because of him.
They were all because of his patience and the way he... You know, he took that extra dribble before delivering the pass, so there was an extra 2 feet of space, you know? Like, I mean, he created so much in those three games, and they handled them in those three games. I know it was close in game 5, and I know it got close in, you know, in game 6, but it was never, at least to me, it was never really in doubt.
Yeah, I mean, it was never really in doubt, because, like, I think, like, I just believed in the Warriors, and I just thought, like, they were gonna, once it got down to the end of the game, like, they were gonna have more energy, and they were gonna figure it out. But I do think like it was somewhat close and competitive, which is why it was fun. But yeah, like when Steph got going, like when he kind of shook free in the series, sort of like against Memphis. Like, it just, that team became almost impossible to stop, even with a defense as good as Cleveland. Like, they had the right game plan, but I don't think there is a game plan that can slow Steph down for a full series, at least when he's surrounded by the kind of players that he has there. And I just thought he was so smart about it. He was so patient. He hit some hero shots that we'll remember, especially in game five. But overall, he was great. He didn't have, like, multiple 40-point games or anything, but if he had won MVP, I would have been cool with that, too.
Yeah,
but I think he's fine with his actual season MVP trophy. Like, I think
he think probably he's good would have
voted for Iguodala if he had one, you know?
Yeah, I think he's good with that and the NBA trophy.
Yes.
I think that'll satisfy him just fine. And Iguodala was a great choice. I mean, I'm not trying to say, oh, they made the wrong decision. Iguodala was really good in the series and really important. And wasn't just a defensive player. He was very important on offense, too. Knocked down a bunch of shots and created a bunch of plays and he got them out in transition quite a bit,
which was
key. So, you know, he was great. And then if you went with LeBron in a losing effort, I don't think that's wrong either. I mean, he was transcendent. He wasn't efficient, but he was transcendent. And I think that we attached too much dismissiveness. Is dismissiveness a word? We attached too much of a dismissal with losing in the finals. And that you can't be the most valuable. Well, he controlled the series. Like, they didn't win, but he still controlled the series and affected everything. And so I think that if we're calling it value, well, there's value in that. there's value in turning what should have been a sweep after Kyrie Irving was injured into a competitive 6-game series.
Yeah, and this will go down as one of the more impressive playoff runs of LeBron's career, and specifically this series. What was like post game like for you?
It was crazy. It was just, you know, the lines to get into the locker rooms are so long in that situation, and it's delayed too. It's delayed longer than usual for letting media members in because they've got to, you know, prep everything. Cavaliers probably want time to, you know,
cry
and process the loss and everything, and process the season being over before they have to start answering a bunch of questions. And so because of that, like, I just kind of went to the court, watched the ceremony, you know, shot a bunch of video with, you know, of the players walking off, caught a cool moment with Draymond Green.
I was so glad you captured that.
I wish I could have put the entire video of that in there, but there was some swearing, so I couldn't do it. But it was even better in the full moment. But it was just like, I don't know. It's cool to see that congratulatory thing up close, because you really, like, you can see it on TV, but you really, like, feel the emotion of it all. You had a bunch of Warriors fans there chanting Warriors, chanting MVP when Andre Iguodala walked through, chanting MVP when Steph walked through. Just kind of soaking in the moment, and family members congratulating everybody. Like, it was, I don't know, it's a cool thing to be able to experience. And then you start trying to write stuff, you go into the press conferences, you talk to whoever you can. And then, like, it's this sobering thing too of, like, the last press conference of the season was LeBron.
Yeah.
And his dejection. And it was, I don't know, it was like this weird moment of, like, you feel all this elation for the Warriors because you see them accomplish this incredible goal that so many great teams haven't been able to do. And then the lasting moment is LeBron saying, like, you know, there are times I wonder if it would be better just not to make the playoffs at all because losing in the finals hurts so much.
Yeah.
And he's like, and then he's like, you know, he kind of said it. I eventually get to the point of, like, no, I want to be in the finals, but
right.
But
which I think some people didn't get that part.
Yeah, they kind of cut that quote off, and he, like,
no, that's,
you know,
an important part of it.
He brought it around. Like, if you stick with the whole thing, he brings it around and puts great perspective to it. But just, like, I don't know, it was, and I was standing behind Rich Paul.
Oh.
And so, like, you're watching this guy, you're watching, you know, this friend and confidant and agent and manager of LeBron, you know, watch his, probably the most important person in his life. I don't know Rich Paul's life, but I would say, you know, at least in the conversation, were most important. You're watching him like experience this pain and dejection of this important figure in his life, and it, I don't know. It was a weird. It was just a like a conflicting feeling, because it's like kind of this cool moment, but at the same time, it's like taking I don't know, excitement or entertainment from watching a like a car accident or something. You know, like I don't know. It was this weird conflicting feelings, and then to have that be the lasting image. Until you get, like, you know, the tweets and the vines and stuff of players celebrating throughout the night and everything. Like, that was, that at least that hour and a half after that moment, that was kind of what I was left feeling about.
Yeah, it's like, wow, you gave everything that you possibly had.
And that's the thing, like, you can't say, like, I mean, you can say, well, LeBron could have hit more shots or blah, 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 but I don't know that you can really say, like, he could have done more. Maybe he could have done differently, but he couldn't have done more, and it still wasn't good enough because this Warriors team is just that good, and the Cavaliers were that undermanned.
Yeah, no, I think this is a historically good Warriors team, and like, I mean, the regular season numbers speak for themselves, and I think, yeah, like it's going to be difficult for them to remain like perfectly healthy pretty much for all of next season again. But I thought it was kind of funny that like we. You know, you look at the like odds for the championship next year, and it's like, oh, well, Cleveland is the number one team, and Golden State's number two. And I was kind of like, we're like sort of a perfect team,
right? And they're gonna be together,
yeah.
You know, maybe they trade David Lee.
I think they still count as together.
Yeah,
trade David Lee, even though he had his moments in the finals, which was actually really nice.
Draymond Green's not going anywhere.
No, he is making like he is not. Leaving anything up to the imagination here, like he's radio and saying like, "Yeah, I'll be back."
Yeah, I hope he drives to games in a Brinks truck next year.
That would be wonderful.
Just some kind of armored car.
Yeah,
for transporting money, like whatever company wants to sponsor him, that's what he should be driving to games next year.
I'll just have a big Beats logo on the side.
Yeah, that was a weird thing. It's a weird thing, too, to, like, before the draft, before free agency, before we have any kind of idea. I mean, we have a couple of trades happening, but before we have any real idea, it's like, someone asked me yesterday, who's the favorite to win next year? I said, it's June 18th. Like, I don't know. There is no favorite. I don't know what the rosters look like for next season.
That is very true. I mean, I would just say, well, the Warriors, I guess, but, like, I mean, we don't know. The Spurs might go and sign Marc Gasol. Like, who the hell knows, you know? but, yeah, okay. So, after the finals end, we get this report about Blatt and LeBron.
Right.
Where, you know, Mark Stein, he is sitting right there, like, right by the Cavs bench. He says he didn't like what he saw from LeBron and how he acted towards his coach. Like, do you think... This is, like, what was your reaction to this, I guess, should be my question here.
I mean, I don't know. I didn't put too much into it. Not that I don't believe Mark Stein. I believe he saw what he saw.
Yeah.
I also don't think that's necessarily... I mean, I can't tell you what LeBron's attitude or motivations were in those moments, if mm-hmm. that's what happened, but I can also tell you that I've seen a lot of things over the last few years in which players question play calls in the huddle, players draw up their own plays. You know, there's second guessing, but it doesn't mean it's bad second guessing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like, I don't know the actual culture of that. I mean, you know, what's Blatt going to say, but Blatt in his end of the season press conference, after the finals, not the night of the finals, but couple days later, said, you know, there's more to the relationship than gets reported or whatever. And I'm sure there's some truth to that. I also, like, what's he going to say? Oh, yeah, LeBron hates me? LeBron doesn't respect me?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's kind of in a what-do-you-say kind of situation. But, I don't know. Like, I'm sure LeBron isn't thrilled with David Blatt as a coach. I don't know that LeBron's ever been thrilled with a coach.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Other than Coach K for Team USA, like, I'm not sure he's ever been crazy about whoever is coaching his team, and I think that part of that is being a star, being the one who wants to you know, come through on all this pressure, and being a guy with a very high basketball IQ that probably has his own ideas. And yeah, some of that's good, some of that's bad, some of that's just how it goes.
And I think a lot of guys that have those high basketball IQs, like, they end up butting heads with coaches sometimes. And, like, I mean, Jason Kidd was like that, and now he's a head coach himself, you know? Like, this is kind of part of the deal when you have, like, a genius of a basketball mind on your team. But I think it is interesting. Like, I think this, it didn't shock me because of the sort of things that were reported back in January. And, like, look, we've been talking about this LeBron Blatt stuff all year, and, like, it's kind of exhausting. But you know who could have made all of that go away really easily is LeBron. Like, if he just said at any point before, like, in June when, like, it was, like, the finals had started, and he said, I think for a rookie coach, he's done a hell of a job, which, like, he used the word rookie coach, which Blatt hates, which is funny. but if at any point before that, when there was all the speculation about his job, LeBron had just said, like, David Blatt is a great coach. We have a great relationship. I endorse him, blah, blah, blah. Like, it would have been easy to get the attention off of him if he just said he's going to be here a long time, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I'm not saying LeBron had to say that, because if he legitimately doesn't have confidence in him, then I guess he doesn't have to fully endorse him. But I think it would have been good for the team this year. And I think it would have reduced some of the distractions around the team. I think if he had just spoke up in support of the guy who was the head coach of the team in his first year in the NBA and tried to relieve some of the pressure off of him. Because I think, you know, Blatt had his moments with the media when he seemed kind of defensive, but he wouldn't have had to be so defensive if he had other people speaking up for him. And he didn't really have that. LeBron, yeah, he did make that one comment, but I think it was way too late. And I think because of that, because we never saw him really support him this year, when a report comes out like this, you're kind of like, okay, like, there's probably fire with that smoke. Like, it doesn't mean that LeBron hates him and wants him gone. Like, I'm not saying that, because as you said, like, it's been like this a lot. Like, we had a similar situation in his first year in Miami where Spoelstra was getting all, you know, he's on the hot seat and all this stuff. And LeBron didn't say a lot publicly to support him, or didn't say enough in a lot of people's opinion. This is similar. So we'll see what happens. I keep getting asked, like, will Blatt be the head coach next year? And I'm like, well, I think so. I mean, they made it to the finals, but it's kind of up to LeBron in a way, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's always going to be up to LeBron.
Yeah.
I mean, and, like, I don't know. Do you have a problem with LeBron having the say, the main say in the? I mean, I kind of think, like, one, you should let people do their job, and I think David Griffin's very good at his job. But two, you should. I mean, I don't know. When I think there's a certain status where you should get a say in what the roster is going to be and what your ideas are for the team and who you feel comfortable playing with, because we are judging his legacy by all this stuff, right?
Yeah. I think he should get a say, but I think, like, that say should happen, like, at the right time. Like, I think there is something to, like, you know, once you're together, once you're in the fire, like, once you're in the regular season and you're competing, you should try to be as united as possible. And it's kind of like, like, when LeBron talks about his teammates, that's sort of how he is. Like, he always has everybody's back. But he's not that way with his coaches, necessarily. And I think where Stein was coming from in that report is, like, well, you guys are working together, so you should make more of an effort to be on the same page there and kind of have each other's back. And I get that. But at the same time, like, yeah, he's a superstar, so he's going to have his opinions heard. He's going to have influence on the franchise because he is the franchise. So I'm not really sure what we do with all of that. I would bet that Blatt is back, and I think there will probably need to be discussions between him and LeBron on, like, how the hell they're going to play next season, because I know the plan wasn't to do what they ended up doing this year. The plan was originally to run the Princeton. And I think there will be changes in what this team looks like roster wise, but more importantly, there'll be changes in how this team plays, like, in terms of style next year. And I think that's something that, like, what's going to be really important is to have the superstar and the head coach, whether it's Blatt or whether it's anybody else, well, let's assume it's Blatt. Like, they need to be on the same page, and they need to not try to introduce something in training camp and then abandon it like a month into the season next time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, continuity is key for them, right? I mean, the continuity is going to be, you know, they need the health. They need one system to stick with and to figure out what's right. And I think that a lot of what David Blatt wanted to do last year was good. I think he needs to, you know, it's like we talked about with the triangle. Like, he needs to find ways to mold what he wants to do to what his personnel is, and what his personnel is, you know, needs more pick and roll. You know, needs more touches for Kevin Love. Needs more situations where LeBron doesn't have to do so much. They figured a lot of that out with Kyrie Irving this year. But they could do much more. And so I think, assuming they bring everyone back, and I think you and I both think they're going to bring everyone back because that's pretty much what they say they want to do.
Yeah.
And it's a good idea. I mean, I think David Griffin threw out a stat, like, after the trades when they had their guys together and healthy, they were like 33-3.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty awesome.
I mean, if you stretch that out over the course of the season, you know, it's pretty historic. So I think that, I don't know, like, I think they're in a really good place. You know, they're building towards a championship. It just seemed unlikely it was ever going to happen in the first year because it almost never happens in the first year. The Celtics did in 2008, and that was a special group. Not that this group isn't special, but they're building towards being a championship contender. And they contended for a championship this year, maybe by default. I think next year it'll be, I don't know, much more earned or much more appreciated or much more accepted, however you want to describe it. I think it becomes much more of a tangible thing where it's not just like, oh, the East is so bad, so that's why they did it. It's holy crap, look at this team. And we started getting, you know, elements of that throughout the season, and then it got it taken away when Love dislocated his shoulder, and then when, you know, Kyrie Irving went down for eventually the end of the playoffs. It's something where it's always going to be about building continuity, building chemistry, building trust with each other, and that extends to the coaching staff.
Yeah, and I wonder if they might have learned something from these playoffs a little bit, and just, yeah, and I think maybe next year they could have, like, they could learn something from the way this happened in the playoffs. Like, maybe their starting five is just, like, absolutely killer offensive unit, like the best one in the NBA, because you have Kyrie and Love and LeBron, and then when they send a couple of those guys to the bench, they can be this, like, tough defensive team that maybe they don't slow it down to the extent that they did and play as isolation-based as they did in the finals, but they can have that kind of other identity where their defense is kind of the number one thing. And, like, their defense improved a bit throughout the year, like, especially when they got Mozgov, but I'm looking at, like, Varejao coming off the bench for them next year, and probably Shumpert being on the bench next year, and Tristan Thompson. And I think you can kind of blend those two things and have a pretty balanced, solid roster next year. The question would be, well, what happens at the end of the fourth quarter in a close game? Like, who's out there? But I think in the regular season, they might blow teams out enough that it doesn't matter that much. Like, I just think it was a sort of disappointing way for it to end for Cleveland, but, like, everything that happened in this story, like, will be good for their future. Assuming that this Blatt LeBron stuff isn't, like, horrible, right? Know? Like, cause I think it should be manageable. But there's only so much that we can tell from the outside here.
Right. And that's the thing. It's a lot of us guessing. It's a lot of us assuming. It's a lot of, I don't know. It's a lot of crap that some of the crap is correct and some of it's not. And we'll never really know, you know, the levels in which either are true. And it's something where trying to figure out what you do at the end of close games when you have LeBron, Kyrie, Love, like, that's not exactly a problem.
It's not a problem.
Like, that's the same. It's not, all right, I'm not saying they're the same thing, but, like, that was the same questions we had about the Heat.
Yeah.
When they were together, like, oh, who are they going to go to at the end of the games? Who cares? They had a lot of games where it didn't matter, and then they had a lot of games where role players stepped up. Like, you just, they don't need much. Like, the Cavaliers only need a better backup point guard. And that's not a knock on Dele. He's just not a point guard, right? Like, he's a good combo off guard.
I think he's a third guard. Yeah. Like, he's a third point guard.
Yeah. Or a fourth guard period or something. You know, like, he's a guy that you don't want to play more than 15 minutes a game, but those 15 minutes could be valuable.
Yeah.
But, like, I think they need to upgrade a backup point guard. and then they just need health. Like they have a great roster.
Yeah.
And I don't think I don't think they need much. And even just the health may be enough to make it work. Does it feel weird? Like, I just feel like, and maybe this is just a product of LeBron, but it just feels like we're talking so much about the Cavs, not just on the podcast, but just in general. And it's like almost ignoring the Warriors championship. But it's also like...
how my life has been. But I've been obsessed over every little celebration video.
That's true, yeah. but the thing is, like, is it because of LeBron, or is it because we just... once it got to the finals, we just all kind of knew, like, oh yeah, the Warriors got this. And then they had it. And now it's over. So I don't know, there was no real drama to it.
I think you're downplaying how freaked out everybody was after three games. Because I think, I mean... We still thought the Warriors were going to win. We said that on this very podcast.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people had kind of turned and said, well, maybe this is what everybody talked about. They can't, like, the game slows down in the playoffs and they can't impose their will on the game. And look what the other team is doing with the best player in the world and blah, blah, blah. And I think that was a real thing. And I think even the two of us, like, as confident as we were in the Warriors, were like, yeah, like, I'm pretty sure the Warriors are going to win, but, like, that LeBron guy's scary.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said, like, at 2-1, with the way the series had been played, the Cavs had to be the favorites at that point.
Yeah, you did say that.
Because the Warriors hadn't changed what was going on in the series. But I think we also both said that, you know, once the Warriors start playing more like themselves, they'll be fine.
It's donezo. Yeah.
And after Game 4, I mean, I was standing waiting to go into the Warriors locker room after Game 4, like... You know, Ethan Sherwood Strauss came up to me and we started talking. I was like, this is over.
Yeah.
He was like, no, I don't know about it. I was like, yeah, this is over. Like, this is like they figured it out. It's done. It's just a matter of, is it going to be 6 or 7 games? But this is over.
I thought that too.
And it wasn't that, oh, look at me being prescient by any means. It was, this is a fatigued, thin Cavaliers team.
Exactly.
Against a deep, you know, relatively rested and clicking Warriors team, and there's so much math. There's only so much math that can be done in this equation.
Yeah, no, exactly. But I think there was still drama, and I think why we're talking about the Cavs more than Warriors are simply like, well, this like LeBron Blatt story is a big thing, and
right. If it came out that Curry and Kerr weren't on the same page after the finals, like that would probably dominate.
Curry wanted to shoot less. Like, I don't know what that story would be. Curry thought Kerr was reading too much on the flights instead of doing X's and O's.
Right.
but yeah. Honestly, like I don't even know what more left to say about the Warriors. Like, they had an incredible run. It's crazy that they ended up winning a title while sitting one of the top five defensive players in the league, in my opinion, and Bogut in the last few games, just him being a cheerleader, and it worked. Like,
yeah.
I think that just speaks to the incredible depth and versatility of this team. And, like, it was a ballsy move, too. And I think this coaching staff, like, I thought Kerr should have won Coach of the Year. Like, I said that even when I thought Budenholzer did a great job, too. But I think there weren't a lot of coaches who would have taken that risk in the middle of the finals, because it works and they look like geniuses, but if it hadn't, then people would be like, what is he doing? Like, the whole, like, how can you pull Roy Hibbert or pull Tim Duncan at the end of a game? This is like, well, you're pulling your rim protector at the beginning and then not using it. I think that if it hadn't worked, there would have been a whole outcry from the traditionalists about what he was doing and about why it doesn't work in the postseason. And it, you know, it worked, and we had Kerr and Gentry saying this validated the Suns, and that was cool. Because I think, honestly, this is the most fun team that I've watched play since those Suns, and I don't think it's even that close, really. Like, this has been a really cool team to follow, and, you know, we keep saying people are annoyed when we say this was felt like the Warriors season and Steph's season, but it did, and it was.
Right, yeah, and it's, I don't know, it's fun. It's fun watching a team like that get vindicated. It's fun seeing that the trends and the direction that we've, you know, argued with people about the league going in are vindicated, are validated. And it's not, oh, the Warriors finally did it. Like, the Spurs were doing it. The Heat did it to a certain extent. Like, the Mavericks did it. Like, this is... We're now looking at five straight championships of this being a thing. Like, this isn't a fad. This is the, this is the goal. This is the system. This is the way the NBA is now, and it's not a lesser thing than what it used to. It's building upon basketball strategy and basketball skill, and if anything, it shows how great of a position the league is in.
Yes,
both, you know, from a schematic standpoint, from an enjoyment standpoint, like this is the, from a an athlete standpoint. Like, this is the best basketball we've ever seen. And there's there's a reason for that. Like, we talk about the 80s and 90s. The 80s and 90s were fine for the times, but that's like saying, like, oh, that 1990 Honda Civic I have is way better than your 2009 Audi. Like, this, you know, like, it's just not, it's not the same.
Yeah.
Things evolve. Things get better. That, you know, if anything, Jurassic Park taught us life finds a way, and basketball has found a way to be, like, a, basketball is a gigantic velociraptor ruling the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't top that.
I don't even know if it made any sense.
A gigantic velociraptor ruling the world.
Speaking
of... like, a monstrous raptor now.
Speaking of raptors,
Where are you going with this?
They have a draft pick. We're not going to talk about what they're going to do in the draft, but they have a draft pick.
You don't want to start with the number 20 pick, Zach?
As fascinating as that would be.
Maybe RJ Hunter? No, let's move on.
Who do you want to see the Raptors get in the draft?
Well, RJ Hunter came in for a draft workout yesterday, and that man can talk to the media.
I love him.
So I would be very happy to talk to him all season, and I think he's going to be an awesome shooter in the NBA, so I'd be cool with that.
Yeah.
But I think there's, like, it's really hard. Like, when you're talking about anything from, like, just outside of the lottery, like, as soon as you get there, I think it's going to be really hard to project what teams will do, because I think all of these teams are looking at, like, five or six different guys who could be there.
Right.
And it just, there could be trades, there could be a lot of things that happen. But I think there's a group of dudes that are kind of all in that same range. And I think, honestly, it's not, I don't think it's as deep of a draft as some of the recent ones, but we'll see.
Hot take. I think it's pretty deep.
I think it has a lot of high end talent. Like, there are, like, the top eight picks, I think, are all going to be pretty great.
I look at someone like Christian Wood, who could go anywhere from, like, 20 to early second round, and I think, like, that's a valuable role player in the NBA. And so I think I look at it in terms of, like, how many valuable role players do we potentially have?
Yeah, Wood's an interesting one to me, because I mean, like, we're talking about, like, the 20 pick, like, that would be a super Toronto Raptors pick. Like, pick this guy who has, like, incredible upside. Who will kind of teach how to play basketball. Like, that's sort of a Masai thing to do.
Right.
But, yeah, he's a freak. Like, watching his highlights is fun. But we should probably start with, like, you wrote about the top two guys. Well, I shouldn't even say that, because they might not be the top two. But,
ooh, hot take.
so hot. the potentially top two picks in the draft, Towns and Okafor. Where do we start here? Is Okafor going to get pulled from a close game because he can't protect the rim properly and can't run up and down the court as fast as smaller guys? Is that what we're talking about here?
No, because we don't see a fast-paced game at the end of games. Like, that just doesn't happen. Like, the fourth quarter always slows down, right? Especially crunch time. Everyone runs, like, isolation sets, and I don't see that being an issue. Like, I don't know. I've looked at a bunch of his defensive stuff, and... he's not good, but I don't think he's a disaster. I've made the comparison a lot of, like, you look at how DeMarcus Cousins was as a defender.
Yeah.
And, yeah, his block rate and steal rates were higher, but he also played in a system where he had better teammates around him, and he could gamble for stuff like that more. He could be more active defensively. They didn't rely on him for so much offense. You know, to center it around. Like, he played for an all-star team. And not that Duke is some, you know, down-on-their-luck organization by any means. Like, they won the championship. They've got maybe four, you know, draft picks for this draft on that roster with Winslow, Tyus Jones, and maybe even Quinn Cook if he can get into the second round. Like, they had plenty of talent, but that team was centered around him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't think... the defense was great, but I look at, you know, Cousins developed defensively into a good defender now by you know, getting into better shape and getting with a defensive-minded coach that had his ear.
So is he like a PG-13 DeMarcus Cousins?
Kind of. Like, I don't think he'll be as good as Cousins, but I think like that's his ceiling, is Cousins. And that's not – I mean, that's a really good player.
Yeah.
And it's a player that you're fine with a one or two pick. And I just think – like, I look at his problems, and I think it's all fixable. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't look at anything. I'm just like, yeah. And I think his passing is way better than his number showed.
His passing is awesome.
He dominated, like he just dominated around the rim. And for a guy who's, you know, not athletic enough to finish and blah blah blah, like he made 75% of his shots at the rim.
Yeah,
he was 90% from the field on cutting to the on shots where he cut to the basket. 47 of 52.
That sounds pretty good to me.
I checked as far back as Synergy will go, about 10 years. No one had cracked 90% on cuts with at least, like, 50 possessions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, there's all these little things where I'm just like he's not going to be Shaq on offense, but he's going to be so good. And I don't think his game is outdated. Like, I think he attacks quickly. He's a good passer out of the post. Like, I think that I think the key to attacking with a post game in the modern NBA is attacking quickly. And he did that in college.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think, like, you can make that translate. It'll be harder for him because you're going from college to the NBA, but I think it's doable. I think he'll be a great passer in spread offenses that play inside out. And I think that I don't think his free throw shooting is so bad that it's, like, that it's going to be DeAndre Jordan. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's 51%. That's not good, but it's not 39%. There's some math for you. And I don't know. Like, I think his jumper, I think the shooting stroke on his jumper is good enough to show a possibility of improvement. And even if he gets to just like 60% as a free throw shooter in the NBA, that's good enough to avoid the hack of stuff, if that even is still allowed heading into, you know, in his career at any point.
I hope it's not.
And then, I don't know, you have an offensive monster. With all that said, Towns is a guy. Like, Towns is a freak. Towns is the number one pick to me. He's been the number one prospect for months in my mind. If anything, watching all that stuff that I did for the post was just heightened all of my feelings about him. Like, he's going to be... I think he's the best player in the draft. I think he'll be the best player in the draft. You could argue that Okafor's ceiling is higher. I don't agree, but I don't think it's insane. D'Angelo Russell may light the NBA on fire, and none of that matters. But yeah. I think Towns is not only the safest pick, but the best pick.
So how long until we have the, like, whose team is it, Wiggins or Towns? Stupid debate.
Oh, God. Can that happen with a Canadian?
Maybe.
Will we even question that because you guys are allegedly so polite?
So Wiggins is really his team. That's what's going to happen?
Yeah. Wiggins is like, oh, no, he can have it. He can have the team. I don't need it.
I think, like... Yeah, I think he's a franchise player.
Yeah.
And he's not, like, I think he's just on a whole other level than the other guys. I think it's crazy. It's like, it's weird watching highlights of Kentucky in general.
That's the thing. It's also hard. It's hard to assess, like, what's real.
Yeah.
Or how real stuff is with those highlights, because it's just not, it's like watching a bunch of scrimmages.
Yeah, because they're killing the other teams, and everybody's playing like certain roles that don't necessarily show off what they can do. I mean, like, I like Trey Lyles was playing out of position, and like, you, that's just, he could have gone somewhere and put up huge numbers, and he went there, and that's fine. And then with like Towns, it's like, I mean, this dude can shoot threes. Like, if we're watching like the workout videos, like, he has so, like, his handle is so good, his shot is so good. His game is not only what we saw there by any stretch.
Right.
So like, I think there's almost nothing that he can't do. Like, I don't know what his weaknesses are going to be in a few years. Like, I think there'll be some things he struggles with as a rookie and as a sophomore, but like, he is, if the Wolves take anybody other than him, I'll be shocked.
Yeah. I mean, from what I've heard, and it seems pretty reliable, like, they're leaning towards him.
Yeah.
It was Okafor all the way when they won the lottery. They've dug in since then, and it seems like, or no, it was Okafor all the way leading up to the lottery. And since they've dug in with, you know, scouting to make sure and all this stuff, and who knows, they still have meetings and all that and everything to consider in this week, or less than a week now, leading up to the draft. But but it sounds like they're headed towards Towns, and it's the, you know, it's the way to go. You have two potentially incredible two-way players in Towns and Wiggins.
Yeah.
And then you surround them with the athletes and potential shooters that they've got, you know, they're starting to put together on the roster. Like, you could have in 3 years, you could have a really special team.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if they can maximize the other guys, like, if they can get, like, LaVine to make good on some of that potential, if they can, like, you know, get Bennett's career going back on the right track, which, I mean, who knows if that's a thing. Like, there's just a ton of talent there. Like, Muhammad had a really good year last year, and, like, I think people are kind of, you know, Rubio's had a weird couple of seasons, but he's still a really good player. Like, I if they can play a more modern style offensively, I think they're going to be dangerous. And, like, defensively, you can't ask for two better, like, foundational pieces than Towns and Wiggins, really, in terms of young defensive prospects. Like, that's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and then after that, you have D'Angelo Russell or Kristaps Porzingis. Am I saying that right?
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about Kristaps here.
Okay.
I am, like, beyond intrigued with him, but, like, I have been since, like, last year when he, you know, he was supposed to be in the draft and he pulled out, and it was like, who is this guy? Like, he moves really fluidly. He's athletic as hell. He has an incredible jump shot, but he's, like, still sort of a twig. So you're kind of like, how is this going to work? Like, because you see superstar in him, but then, like, Danny Chow wrote a really good story on him for Grantland a couple of weeks ago, and, like, the first line of the piece is, like, Kristaps Porzingis looks like a bust. Like, he just looks like one, physically. So with the whole history of, like, the European mystery man coming over and not working out, like, he's kind of working against that. But then at the same time, you're like, well, I remember Dirk was super skinny, and, like, that worked out okay. And I realize I'm doing the thing that everybody does and only comparing him to other Euro guys. But, like, I don't know. I think it's kind of fun that he's screwing up people's mock drafts and people are saying, like, oh, well, the Lakers might be interested in him now. Like, yeah. I don't know what's, like, going to happen there.
Let's remember why that would come up.
I mean,
there's some agent work here that's,
yes,
leaking stuff and getting hype built around and all this. Like, just because someone says, I'm hearing that, you know, the Lakers are considering Kristaps with the number two pick. Like, it doesn't mean, hey, they're now going to pick Kristaps with the number two pick.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that.
Yeah.
But it means if he goes top two, top three, top four, like, we can't be surprised at this point at all.
Right. I mean, I guess, like, if you want to do a non-Euro comparison, maybe this is too thin, but, like, Jonathan Bender?
Maybe.
You know, like, he had perimeter skills. He wasn't a, you know, he was a rail thin guy.
I think Kristaps is a better shooter. Not probably.
Yeah.
But
and like, I'm not saying, hey, congratulations getting Jonathan Bender because that didn't work out so well. But,
well, but it's also like, congratulations, you're going to have, like, horrible career ending injury. Like,
right.
Bender could have had a good career.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he could have developed and,
yeah,
you know, his body failed him. But I don't know. It's, you know, we freak out over these, like, one-on-none workouts,
mm-hmm,
only when it's Euro guys. Show me where Okafor and Towns are going.
I think
going
we freaked out about Towns
going at each other. Yeah. No, but I'm talking about, like, in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, there he goes going against the, you know, a chair there. Like, Towns and Okafor aren't showing you these incredible workouts. Like, they're showing individual skills like he did, but because he's European, like, we're going to dismiss his. I just think it's a weird way of looking at these pre-draft things that are all smoke and mirrors anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he's going to be Towns or Okafor, or nor do I think he can be as good as either of those guys, but I think he could be a really good player based on the little information we have, as opposed to just dismissing that information. Doesn't mean he will. It's all about fit and who gets in,
yeah,
and how hard he wants to work and all that stuff, but,
no,
but the skills are apparent, and the frame is really good. He needs to put,
yeah,
on, he needs to put on some muscle, but the frame's really good, or not even put on muscle, just get stronger. And he looks like he both looks like a bust, and he both looks like a very intriguing prospect.
Yeah, exactly. No, and I think the whole, like, the the tone of everything you just said is really smart, because I think the problem is when we get this close to draft is, like, you have people saying, like, oh my goodness, this guy should be the number one or number two pick. Like, this guy looks amazing. He's a franchise player. And then you have others saying, like, well, wait a minute. How can anybody say he's a number two pick? How can anybody get this excited? Everybody chill the hell out. And it's like, well, like, we don't know either way. Like, we really don't. And a lot of times we don't know who a team really, quote unquote, should have picked until, like, 3, 4, 5 years later.
Right.
And especially with guys that we're talking about that spent, like, a year in college or whatever, and these guys that are 19. Like, we don't know. Like, I wouldn't even say that, like, Porzingis can't be as good as Okafor. Like, maybe he can be. Maybe he can even be as good as Towns. I wouldn't bet on that one. But we're looking at an extremely skilled player. You don't find guys that are that height with that shooting ability that also have athleticism. Like, that just doesn't really happen.
Other than, like, a basketball xenophobia, is there any reason to not consider Porzingis as a top five prospect? Like, I wouldn't have him over Towns. I wouldn't have him over Four. I wouldn't have him over Russell. I have the same questions about him that I have about Moutier.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just don't know with the competition they were playing against. And some people will say, oh, well, if you look at, you know, when they were playing against this guy in this hoop summit or whatever, it's like, that's such a small sample.
Yeah, I mean, like, the summit was a game.
Right, like Bismack Biyombo was a phenomenal player in the hoop summit. And,
that's true.
You know, like, you just don't know with that stuff. But, you know, like, I have the same question about him. I think that, you know, maybe Justice Winslow's in there.
Maybe.
Maybe Willie Hezonja
might be in there.
Yeah, Hezonja might be in there. Willie Cauley-Stein might be in there. But just because it's a big Euro guy doesn't mean that.
Doesn't mean stay away.
Right, doesn't mean stay away. It means, you know, see if you can figure out how to make it work, because if you can, my God, it could be great.
Yeah. And that's why I said, like, I really love, like, the top, like, eight or so picks in this draft. Like, I loved watching Winslow play. And I'm like, we've talked about Hezonja before. I like the way that he plays. I think he could be really, really good.
I like cocky basketball players. I really do. Hezonja's that. Kristaps seems to be that.
Yeah.
I can buy into a lot with a guy having the attitude of, like, no, I want to come in here and destroy the league.
Yeah, and we're getting a lot of, like, European dudes like that now. Like, Saric is like that. And, like, I realize we might still not see him for another 2 or 3 years, depending on what happened with his contract there. But, like, this is kind of a fun little trend that we're seeing here. I think a lot of guys, even consciously, like in the interviews that Porzingis did, we had one on our site by Sam Vicini on the college side, and he's sort of our draft guy now. He did one. Porzingis did a few other ones. He talked to Woj, and, like, a lot of these stories, he's, like, he's very aware of the perception and of the stigma, and he's, like, directly saying, like, no, I'm not this, like, I'm not soft, and I'm not going to be, like, a bust or, like, whatever. Like, right.
And also, what is he going to say? Like,
yeah, no, but I mean, like, he seems to be consciously delivering that message.
Yeah.
Like,
that could be agent PR publicist spun as well. Like, hey, go say this in interviews so we can get your draft status up.
Sure.
But this also could be just genuinely how he feels.
Yeah. But I think he's a super exciting prospect. I really love the package of skills that he has. And frankly, if I had, like, the fifth or sixth pick in the draft, depending on how the first few shake out, like, you could end up really having a tough decision to make. Like, there's just a lot of talent there.
Yeah, like, I think if you're the Knicks, you've got a tough decision between four guys.
Mm.
You know, Moutier.
Are we assuming that the top three are Towns, Okafor, Russell?
Gotta be. I don't think Philly's passing on Russell. And if the Lakers take him, I don't think they're passing on Okafor. I don't think they will. Like, I think they'll take him, and then you have insurance in case Embiid can't play this year, and you always have a trade chip with one of those three guys.
I could see them going Porzingis, but
this, I mean, he's Hinkie has been stockpiling assets no matter what the fit is.
Yeah.
I just, like, I don't think he's passing up on the potential of that trade chip at worst.
Okay, so we're talking Knicks, looking at what,
Moutier, Porzingis, Winslow, even Willie Cauley-Stein.
Do you put Hezonja in there?
I don't think they'd go Hezonja.
Okay.
But from there, like, all right, so the Knicks decide on one of those guys. I think if you're the Magic, you're looking at Winslow, you're looking at Porzingis.
What about Cauley-Stein?
Yeah, you could. I mean, you could play him next to Vucevic.
I think he's kind of perfect to play next to Vucevic.
Yeah, I mean, Vucevic is not the main big guy you want on a team. And not saying, like, Willie Cauley-Stein would be the French.
I think offensively he is, but defensively he is not.
Right, exactly. You need...
And that's why...
Yeah, you need him. And you could, I mean, God, with Vucevic on the offensive boards and Willie Cauley-Stein on the defensive boards with him, like, that could be dominating.
And then, like, just every, like, Peyton and Oladipo and, like, Aaron Gordon, like, you just have a bunch of dudes.
You need guys to figure out how to shoot, but...
That's an issue.
Yeah, but you've got some serious contention there. And then... Who's sixth? If you're the Kings, I think you're hoping for either Willie Cauley-Stein or Moutier to fall.
Yeah, and then I completely agree. And if they're both gone, I think they're a really good option still.
Right, like trading for Ty Lawson.
But I was gonna say, but I think they would consider trading that pick. Yeah, and that's the move everybody's talking about.
And I think
about.
You know, I think Denver's looking at Winslow or Hezonja.
And, I would love Hezonja.
Yeah, and then I mean, you've got like whatever small forwards are left, go, or maybe even Devin Booker going with the Pistons or the Hornets.
I think Booker's a bit overrated, but
maybe I love his shooting. Like he can flat out shoot it, and so I think that in terms of fit, like he could fit with any of those teams.
Yeah,
you know.
No, I mean he'll be fine. I also think
we're seeing a crap load of trades. That are gonna
yeah, that could
make the night impossible.
I think we usually do, and that's usually a lot of fun. I wonder if Sam Hinkie will be the like star of the draft night again.
Maybe.
I hope he is. but yeah, I think overall, like I think once we get into like the mid-20s, it's a little bit like it's not as exciting as past years. But I think all of those teams that we just talked about are going to get a really good player, I think. Like, I don't think there's a lot of bust potential at the top of this draft.
Right, I agree with that.
As much as other years.
Yeah.
But I do think, like, yeah, like, how... If you're choosing between Moutier and Willie Cauley-Stein, like, I don't know how you add that up. Like, that at a certain point, it's about fit on your team. It's about...
Right.
And I think it's weird, because it's like, Cauley-Stein... Like, I don't know how you feel about him, but I think, like, he's, like, an incredible prospect.
I love him. I really love him. Like,
and I think if he was, again, like, if he was on a different team in college, and it's, like, it's not like he didn't play a lot. Like, he played. But I think you just didn't think of him as, like, the star of that team.
Right.
Which is fair. But in a different situation, you're like, oh, my goodness. Like, look at how this guy moves. Like, he can
guard. Yeah, like,
guard.
He could, I mean, maybe not this way offensively, but he could have been, like, the modern Marcus Camby.
Yeah.
In terms of a college player, right? Like, I mean, he was that kind of athletic and versatile and could cover anywhere kind of things. Like, and I think the part of the problem is like, having questions in someone's game has now become, like, this player is flawed. And it's just, like, no one... There are, like, four complete players in the world.
Yeah.
At best at any given time. And it's like, everyone else has holes in their game that you try to minimize while maximizing their strengths and putting players around them that do the same.
Yeah.
And that's just, and like, I feel like because of certain questions and certain prospects, like, it doesn't mean they're flawed and unfixable. It just means like, yeah, you gotta compensate for that elsewhere in the roster.
Right.
And try to develop that, you know, to not be a problem. And problem's probably even too strong of a word.
Yeah. To just have it not be a big issue.
Right.
And like, yeah, like,
and there will a couple of guys are going to bust out in the top, you know, in the top 13, 14 picks. Like, we'll have a couple of busts, but you know, that happens.
It does, but I'm just not sure that happened in the top like 7 or 8 this time.
Right,
I feel really good about most of these players.
Yeah.
And
someone's got to be a Stauskas.
Oh, Sauce Castillo, how can you do that to him? how can you do that to Sauce Castillo? 1 year in the NBA, yeah. Dysfunctional team.
Yeah.
Let's give him a year with George Karl before we totally dismiss.
That's fair.
Sauce Castillo. I wonder if the Kings will do another video from their war room, where they do a conference call, and then they make the everybody in the war room go like, Moutier rocks.
Yeah,
like,
and then we try to figure out like which half of the war room will be dismissed within the next year.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited about this draft. I'm excited about the coverage leading up to it. We got a bunch of good stuff on CBSSports.com.
Yep, .com.
It's important
.net.
To put the .com in there because
you can just Google it and then click the thing.
But if like you were just listening to this and decided like, oh, it's on CBS Sports, like I'm just going to yell CBS Sports into the air and expect the information to come to me. That I'm not going to say it never works, but it rarely works.
Well, it depends on your proximity to either one of us.
Like, that's true.
Somebody yelling CBS Sports, like I'll probably run up to them, and then
you're gonna run up to them.
Yeah,
I would saunter.
You'd saunter.
Yeah.
Do you get on your what is the thing that what is it the funky thump, what was it the J.R. Smith
funky Cole Medina? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. I don't know the brand name of J.R.'s Segway-like vehicle. Nothing a vehicle.
Contraption. It was very much a contraption.
Yeah.
All right. But yeah,
you would use that if you had it. Right?
Yeah, I probably would.
Okay.
Yeah, or a tricycle. Not enough adults on tricycles these days.
Not enough.
Not enough.
That's the stance you're taking.
Yeah. That's my hot take.
I see too many on unicycles. I really don't like it.
I don't. Unicycles make me uncomfortable.
They make me mad.
Yeah.
It's like, who do you think you are?
I've never attempted to ride one. I think mostly because I have friends.
Because you're not desperate for unicycle attention.
Exactly.
Got it.
All right. Well, I think that's a great way to end this podcast.
Thanks, Zach.
Yeah, thanks, James. We can follow you on Twitter at OutsideTheNBA. Do the whole iTunes subscribe, review, contraption process.
Contraption's the word of the day.
Contraption is the word of the day. And we will talk to you later. Thanks, James.
Thank you again.